Welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Hallowell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we're checking in with some streaming in June. This is
Love
June.
It.
Can't yeah. believe.
No.
I know. Moulin Rouge, 20 years later.
So excited.
Yeah. And birthday cakes.
Love it.
It's going to be a good episode. We swear. Yeah. Before we get into the show, let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear are so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Okay, another month has passed. Time is passing. We are now in June, which means that we have another month of like some streaming wrecks, but we have this fun little thing to talk about up top that has to do with streaming because Spotify released this new campaign this week called Only You. And the whole gist is like, only you listen like X, Y, and Z or love this artist and that artist and this other thing. So it's, you know, you, the Spotify listener is a unique person and they kind of compile all this really fun data. I personally live for this stuff, even though I don't know why, but I always have so much fun clicking through it. What did you guys think about getting this email and seeing this in the app?
I was really excited about it. I love Spotify Wrapped. First of all, I want to say we're not being asked to talk about this. We just are like legitimately really embarrassing and nerdy and like wanted to talk about it.
Well, so it's like also people have been posting it to like Instagram.
Yeah,
and
it's like
Twitter
a big
stuff,
social media thing. But yeah, I like this stuff too. I was disappointed by mine though. Did you guys
me
like
too.
Yours?
No.
It was so embarrassing. It's like, I already know my music tastes are embarrassing. I don't need it like flashed on a sign for me.
Yeah. It felt like a little bit of a drag. Like, I mean, Spotify Wrapped is great. Like, it's also embarrassing. But there was something about this specific one that was specifically embarrassing. Like, for my unique artist pair, it was like, only you would play this artist and then this artist. I had Maggie Rogers and Fall Out Boy.
No, God.
I don't remember playing Fall Out Boy this year, but apparently I did right after Maggie Rogers.
Yeah, mine is only you would play SZA after The Doors. And I'm like, I can't be the only one. That feels like
can't
the
be the only one.
Okay. I feel like mine is the worst because it was like only you would play Orville Peck after Katy Perry. And I'm like, is that a joke? Is that a joke?
Okay. So they got really specific. Normally Spotify Wrapped is like, here's your top songs. Here's your artist of the year, whatever. This was like some deep cuts, which I think is why I had a problem with it. Cause I don't have a memory of listening to some of these things.
Totally.
They did this audio birth chart where it's like your sun sign, your moon sign, and your rising sign.
They know what the millennials want.
100%. Because I don't know, that meant nothing to me, but I think there are a lot of people that were like, oh my God, my birth sign. Or whatever. Mine were not great. My moon sign was Tony Bennett, and I have no recollection of listening to him. So,
amazing. Wow.
And my issue with the birth chart was that your top artist was your sun sign.
Right.
Which was a good warning. And we can talk about this more in a minute. But my top artist is still Taylor Swift. And I have not listened to Taylor Swift since, I mean, those albums were like winter albums. So probably January was the last time that I listened to Evermore and Folklore. But I think the problem is like I listen to a lot of K-pop and I listen to so many different artists that I don't just listen to one. So then Taylor Swift is still winning six months into the year. So it's good. It was like a good warning of like, okay, you like focus on someone for a little bit and like kind of bump that up because otherwise it's going to still be Taylor Swift, which is fine.
Yeah.
But then I also had Phoebe Bridgers. That was my moon sign. I was like, okay, this is like a little bit too like sad white girl. You need to switch things up a little bit.
Amelia, who do you got in there? What else you got?
Well, when we did this cringe mode, I freaking predicted. You can go run through the old tape. I said, you know what? I bet Josie and the Pussycats will end up being my most listened to album. And surprise, surprise, on my audio birth chart, it said Sun Sign, most listened to artist is Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh my God.
Yes. But my moon sign is the Killers. And then my rising sign, which I guess is a recent discovery, is Christina Aguilera. And I'm like, recent discovery.
Wow.
Wow. I've been listening to her new for
artist,
years.
Indie artist, Christina Aguilera.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was not super impressed by mine. They had one that was like, you know, you played like this song really late at night or early in the morning.
Yes.
Which mine was Waking Up Slow piano version by Gabrielle Aplin. Shoot. They was like, only you would play this in the morning. I was like, it's called Waking Up Slow. I think a lot of people have probably played this song in the morning. But yeah, I don't know. Mine was not what I expected.
Yeah, this was a wake up call for sure, Kate. I know you have some thoughts about what our game plan should be going into the next 6 months before Wrapped comes out, because I need to make some adjustments or I need to okay, again, I'm plagued by my workout music likes and then my like normal human Liz Kelly likes. And again, I'm just begging someone at Spotify to help me separate those two. But yeah, what should we be doing between now and when that Wrapped comes out?
I think we got to get serious. I think we got to go at it with like focus, with intention.
Yeah.
Instead of just turning on something random, be like, okay, who should I listen to for 2 hours?
Right.
Whose discography can I get really into to bump Taylor Swift out of that top spot? Like while I'm working on this spreadsheet, maybe less like shuffle playlists and more like actual albums like that we're focusing on. Amelia, I think you should keep doing what you're doing.
Okay. I was going to jump in and say that.
I don't think you can do better than Josie and the Pussycats. I think you need to stick with that, no matter how sick of it you get, just for the lulz. And yeah, I think that should be our game plan.
Wait, Amelia, I will legitimately pay you if in 6 months from now your rap comes out and it has Josie and the Pussycat Dolls as your top artist. So use that as incentive.
Okay. Well, there's only one way to go up from Tim McGraw's something like that. And I guess it's Josie and the Pussycats. So whatever.
Such range. You have such range.
I love it.
Oh, God.
Okay. Also, speaking of streaming, again, new month, we're doing some June streaming recs. I'm going to go first. I got two and kind of one note for the people. First one is I just watched Bo Burnham's Inside. He's a comedian. He filmed this during the pandemic, which we're still in, but like more like from March 2020 to now.
Oh, wow.
He wrote, directed, shot, edited it all by himself, like zero crew. It was just him and what looked like his like back house, kind of like descending into madness. And I thought it was going to be really COVID heavy and like all jokes about, and it truly was not at all. It was more of just like his mental sanity kind of being affected by the pandemic and how that affected his comedy, but nothing, no COVID jokes, which was great, which I know we all say we don't need and don't want.
Right.
But it's very entertaining. Kate, I know you watched it too. Did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it. I love Bo Burnham. I firmly think that as we as a society are not sure about John Mulaney in these trying times, that we should focus our attentions on Bo Burnham, who I think is attractive in a similar way. I'm more attracted to Bo Burnham than I would like to admit.
Ah, okay.
Also, his longtime partner is Laureen Scafaria, who directed Hustlers. So an underrated Hollywood power couple. But anyway, love the special. I started watching it and I texted my brother who likes Bo Burnham. And I was like, hey, like new special. He's doing a song right now about FaceTiming your mom. Like really funny. And then I had to text my brother like 45 minutes later and was like, okay, gets a little dark, bit of a tough watch. Still very highly recommend it, but like not the vibe that I led you to believe it was 45 minutes ago.
Yes.
Because it definitely gets very like introspective and sort of like about his depression and like just existing in quarantine, which is incredibly relatable.
Yeah.
But yeah, really good, really funny, a little dark, but ultimately like felt very cleansing to watch.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. The other one is a total pivot. I also watched on Netflix Seaspiracy, which I feel like I'm always a couple weeks late to this kind of stuff. And I know I think everyone who's going to watch it has probably already watched it, but I found it very educational. It's basically examining the environmental impact of fishing and like our human impact on marine life. So if you like documentaries and like learning about the environment, I would definitely recommend it. And also very deep cut. This is maybe for two people listening, I'm hoping. But if anyone used to watch Whale Wars on Animal Planet a decade ago, there are a couple people featured there. I fucking love Whale Wars. I was its biggest fan. So upset when I got canceled.
Oh, iconic.
Anyway, the whole crew, Paul Watson and the Sea Shepherd, are still out on the seas trying to help our environment and trying to help our fishing industry. So
they were never doing it for... the notoriety. They were always doing it for the whales.
10 years later, they're still at it. So that was really lovely to see.
I'll be honest, I watched like half of it and I had to shut it off because I was like, I can't. But I think you're 100% correct.
Seaspiracy, you had to turn off?
We should all watch it. Well, because I was like, I'm already depressed. I can't do this.
Right.
Maybe pick it back up at a different time of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. And then very quickly, guys, I'm back in my survive grind. My brother is home from school. So I'm diving into the David versus Goliath season. Oh. Freaking loving it. I missed it. And if any of you want to like jump in now with me, you can.
Yes.
So
who is your favorite characters so far?
I'm like 5 episodes in.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard, but we also did a draft this time, which I think is really fun because it gets you more invested from episode 1 as opposed to you have to wait halfway through the season and you like 6 people or whatever. So now I'm invested in all types of odd contestants, but I'll have to DM you about it because I know we've made Kate suffer enough. But yes, anyway, if anyone wants to watch it with me, please.
Great, great season. Great season.
All right, Amelia, what are you watching this month?
So Netflix got 2 seasons of this show called Ink Master, which premiered on Spike, but moved to like the Paramount Network. Then it got canceled and is being revived by Paramount Plus, apparently. And it's pretty much what it is like a bunch of tattoo artists from across the country come in to compete against each other for the title of Ink Master, and they all have to like do all the different styles, and Dave Navarro hosts it, and it's so, I have become so obsessed with it that I bought Paramount Plus just so I could see the other seasons.
This show, I thought you were gonna say you like bought a tattoo.
No, that's the thing. See, I will never, and I was talking to my friend about this. We were both like, I will never get a tattoo, but I can tell you all the difference. New school, black and gray realism, portrait, Japanese style. Yeah, I'm obsessed with it. It's so good. I was always like, you know, Dave Navarro, whatever. But watch it for Dave Navarro. He is so funny. There's like this moment where I don't understand Dave Navarro, but yet I do understand Dave Navarro because there's like a moment where he introduces the finale of one of the seasons and he is hanging. They decided it was a good idea to hang this guy by his skin, like put like, it's called suspension. Yeah. And so they just like thread, I don't know, stuff. And so he's like hanging by his skin and he's just like, welcome to the Ink Master finale. And some random ass guy that they hired just comes up to him and starts swinging him back and forth, back and forth.
Amelia.
By his skin. Yeah.
What?
And it's wild. It's wild.
I'm gonna need to sit with that for a minute.
It's and there's also it's really funny because this show is sponsored by different like corporations and whatnot, and like in the 5th season, and this has become like a whole meme, it's sponsored by Taco Bell, and so they cut to Dave Navarro for like every single challenge and he's always like, and today's challenge is presented by Taco Bell, which encourages everyone to live moss. And you guys are all living moss. And so it's become like this meme of Dave Navarro saying live moss. And whatever reason, the internet has grabbed a hold and will not let it go. And honestly, it's hilarious. I mean, you know, consumerism bad, but sure. I just, it's so good. This show is so addictive. And I say that as someone who doesn't, I will never get a tattoo because I'm too afraid of pain. But
I feel
God,
like
I
know a little
show.
Bit about it from your Instagram stories. You take clips mm-hmm. sometimes. It's like a nice little taste of what the
Thank
hell is
you.
Happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, ink and need, all that stuff kind of freaks me out, but I will live right? through you watching
yes,
Thank
this show.
You. It's very good. I honestly, the first two seasons that are on Netflix, I challenge everyone to watch it and not subscribe to Paramount Plus. They got me. And who knew?
I, yeah, next one.
Okay, and then also, I know everyone's been watching it, but I have become obsessed with Mare of Easttown. Yeah, I mean, it ended or whatever, so but you can catch up. There's only
now
like
it's the perfect
episodes.
Time. You don't have to wait week to week like the rest of us did.
Exactly. And that's what I did up until the finale. But it's really good. I don't know. I mean, there's nothing more I can say than it's, you know, it's a dark, gloomy drama, but there are funny moments. There are a lot of good characters. And again, it's only 7 episodes, so you can do it. I binged it in like a night. So, yeah.
Yes. Maybe not healthy for your mind, but there's been a lot of good coverage on The Ringer, both writing on the writing side, and then The Watch has had Kate Winslet on and a lot of episodes about Mare of Easttown as well. And also, if you liked Mare of Easttown, which I also really did, I recommend watching Broadchurch, which is like basically the British version of Mare of Easttown. Mm. I cannot believe how many similarities there were between the shows, but it's Olivia Colman and David Tennant, and they're detectives who get called in to investigate the death of a child and have to work together. Sounds familiar, but it's 3 seasons. It was on Netflix last week, but I'm not sure if it still is. And then Happy Valley also has kind of like the woman who lives in the small town and has to sort of investigate like her neighbors and people she knows and like solve a murder. So very similar vibe. Cannot recommend Broadchurch enough. I love Broadchurch. But yeah, similar energy to Mare of Easttown. And then the last thing I'm excited for in June, maybe streaming, maybe not, now that we get to choose, is In the Heights. You guys, a big movie musical. Love it. Maybe I'll go to a theater to see it. Am I ready? I don't
That's
know.
That's so exciting. Even to think about that is exciting.
Mask up and go? I don't know. Maybe like a matinee, not very many people. It comes out June 11th. It just seems like the type of movie I want to see on the big screen. You
sure.
know? Yeah. It's Lin-Manuel Miranda's like first musical. It was on Broadway. They made it into a movie. I'm just really excited. I haven't been to a movie, obviously, in forever and ever. So we'll see. I'll keep you posted. Ooh. I'm sure The Ringer will have lots of coverage of that movie
please
as
do.
Well.
All right, next category, just fair warning. So it's a random one this week. You got a couple different things to talk about. This is, of course, the like not worth the tea, social media, a little relationship news, a little wildlife news. You know, this is our mashup category, and this is a really big mashup this week. Yeah. Amelia, I'm going to start with you.
You know, we've seen the rise, I feel like, in recent years of stan accounts, just people, you know, running these accounts because they're huge fans and they have nothing else to do, which, hey, I get it. I get it. I would have one too, but I don't think I feel so passionately about someone as a lot of people do, which is fine. But as you know, we've got the Ana de Armas updates. It was revealed that Lil Nas X was running a Nicki Minaj stan account. Well, now someone who is running the James McAvoy updates has given us all the most stunning update, I think, from one of these accounts. And they posted to the Instagram James McAvoy updates saying, "I'm done with this account. Thank you all for the laughs, but I have no motivation to keep updating on James. This account was initially to help me let my feelings out and sometimes rant, but my antidepressants have started working and they helped me realize I actually do not like James McAvoy as much as I thought I did. If you were looking forward to my updates, I apologize. You will have to find another account to follow as I am no longer suffering from mental illness." XX heart emoji, which I mean, what a stunning development. I'm so glad this person is on antidepressants. And I feel this is what a ringing endorsement for antidepressants, because I do feel like a lot of times, and I mean, we've all been guilty of it. You just go into like this hole of like, you know, I so
a hyperfixation.
Yes. Just relate to this person. And now it's James McAvoy. Now this woman is, or man, they are like, I actually don't like him as much as I thought I did.
I don't need him anymore. You know, you've moved
right on. to venture out into the real world, which I think is great. What a evolution. And it's just, you know, hilarious.
You know what I also
funny
love
to see.
Is 19 people liked this on Instagram. And I hope that, you know, James McAvoy updates doesn't need any outside validation to be like good, but only not like, could they not? I should follow this and throw this a like, because I'm like, more people should support James McAvoy updates in their like better mental health state, you know?
Right. Also, I've seen this people tweet about this, but they're not actually going to like the actual post, which is bad form.
That's
bad manners.
Agreed.
Right.
Agreed.
Right.
So happy for them.
That was an important update. Thank you.
Hey, anytime. I also have another important. I guess I have two. I'm sorry. First one or second one is Courtney Stodden said that that they are engaged to entrepreneur Chris Shang. So really happy for them because, I mean, I don't even want to get into all the crap that they've had to deal with for the past 10 plus years. And the whole Chrissy Teigen, just go away. Truly go away.
Live your life.
Yeah. Go offline.
Elsewhere.
I don't know. It's just like, you're sad. Anyway, so happy for Courtney Stodden and Chris Shang. Wish them the very best. Mm-hmm. And then also, I love someone wrote, David Spade as possible new Bachelor host. Feel free to delete, because it's like,
that was me. Honestly,
okay. Like, who cares?
It's like, yeah, that we're going to talk about this.
Honestly. Right.
Totally. Yeah. No, I know. It was like, kind of, yeah, like, woo, but also like, yes. Yeah. So apparently him and other celebrities, quote unquote celebrities, are supposed to guest host Bachelor in Paradise amid Chris Harrison's break from the franchise. How do we feel about this?
You know what they should do? I had a lot of like David Spade jokes I was going to make, but this came to me. They should do the same host that they did for Jeopardy.
Oh my gosh, that's a good idea.
They had like the specific like guest host, like do Anderson Cooper, Katie Couric, Aaron Rodgers, and just like, I'm sorry you didn't get the Jeopardy job, but like, here's what we do have for you. Bachelor in Paradise.
That's
and just
actually,
like, see how they do.
That's a brilliant idea.
That is a good idea.
It'd be a good social experiment.
Yeah. I don't need David Spade on the TV.
And no one has ever needed more David Spade.
But like, also, this franchise is just fucking hellbent on booting me from being a fan. It's like pushing. I don't know why I still even like, put this in an outline, clicked an article that talked about David Spade, because I just need to quit it. But I know, Amelia, you're a little bit more in the weeds than I am. But yeah.
No, I get it, man. But it's like kind of an incentive, because like, how badly is David Spade going to mess this up? How many bad jokes? I want to hear single bad jokes.
Yeah.
Joke that he has to say, because I am a masochist, I guess. I don't know.
You'll have to tell us how that goes. Yeah, maybe I'll watch. Paradise is more fun, but we'll see.
That's true.
Now we got some wildlife news. Total pivot. Kate.
Guys, we talked about bees a couple of weeks ago, and I do want to report back that I did win the debate of how many bees there were on Angelina Jolie's body. It was over 100, just for some closure there. But there's more news in the bee space. Mm. There's bee beef, if you will. The bee community is a buzz. Sorry.
Stop.
Sorry. So we talked about, I believe we mentioned the bee lady on our previous bee pod, where it was like this blonde woman, she was like something Texas bee saver or something on TikTok. And she got really famous for being blonde and going into these like huge communities of bees and like scooping them out and quote unquote rescuing them. So people were like all in on the bee lady, but other bee keepers who exist online are now coming out speaking about how she promotes unsafe practices for people, and like wearing her hair down can be really dangerous, and she doesn't use protective gear, which can be like dangerous for people who think they can just go in and do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So at LA Honeybee Rescue on TikTok just came out with like this video talking about how problematic her bee treatment is. And then other beekeepers have also spoken out on social media. Now people are kind of like, there's backlash to the backlash. Ugh. And speaking in favor of her and being like, just sort of demystifying beekeeping and just, you know, selling their product the way any other creator does.
The Jamila Jamil.
of the
reckoning
bees.
Of the bees.
Of the bees. So yeah, not necessarily taking a side in the bee wars, but there is bee discourse. There is a controversy on bee TikTok. So if you are on bee TikTok, if you have thoughts, please let me know. Mm-hmm. I will say that she does go at it with kind of a, I don't know, I don't like her energy so much. Oh. She kind of, I don't know. It does seem very performative, whereas some of these other beekeepers that are speaking about it, I'm like, okay, you look like the real deal. Like, you look like you know what you're doing legit. But, you know, all of these people are sticking their hands into massive amounts of bees to rescue them. So, like, more power to you, I guess.
I thought you were going to make another pun there, sticking their hand, I don't know, in like a sticky situation. I'm really happy you didn't, though. Extremely happy you didn't.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah. The other piece of wildlife news, we have got to talk about it, also came from a very viral video on TikTok, was a woman that was videoed caught by like her Ring or some kind of alarm system shoving a full-ass grown bear off of her backyard ledge because the bear was, like, swiping and not attacking, but more just, like, maybe about to attack her small dogs that lived in her backyard. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can post a video. It's everywhere if you just Google, you know, woman pushes bear off ledge. And it's not a large ledge. It's, like, you know, a couple feet.
It's
also
like a
bears.
Fence. Yeah.
Bears will be fine. But anyway, so now all of these people are writing about it. And the most shocking part is this woman who did this is actually a 17-year-old girl named Haley.
Wow.
And the fact to be so young and to be so fearless is just, I mean, mind-boggling. So she was interviewed. And she basically her recollection is the dogs were barking. She goes out there to tell them to stop. And when I go over there to see what they're barking at, I'm like, that's a funny looking dog. BuzzFeed interviewed her. This is where she said this. She felt compelled to help after noticing the bear picking up the smallest dog of the group.
Oh my God.
So this is what she says. I go over to the bear. I look it in the eyes. And the first thing I think to do is to push it. Push a bear. Push an apex predator. Which I'm like, Haley, you are braver than 99% of the population. I would legitimately... I don't know what would get me to push a bear or be brave enough to like go head to head with one. I don't know. This is mind boggling.
That's insane. Wait, what kind of bear was it?
It looks brown.
Shut
which
up.
Are the kind that those would, I mean, those
what?
Eat people.
Yes.
I don't know that it was like a grizzly bear, but it was.
CNN is calling it a black bear.
So. Okay, those are still scary.
They've probably also eaten people.
Yes.
Yes.
It is like not a small bear. It's not like a grizzly,
not.
But it's not small.
And they had two cubs. The bear had two cubs with her, which means they get really aggressive when that happens. And like, you know, they'll do anything to protect their cubs. So this is insane.
What would you guys have done? I feel like I would have looked for a shovel or something.
Yeah,
that's
smart.
I think that would have been because I do think like it's on the fence. It's like balancing.
God.
So I do think it's like reasonable to be like, I have to push it off. But I don't think I would have gone hands first.
No, they are so strong. This bear could have just like climbed up or like on his hind legs and just swiped her and then she's done. So
yeah, really quick reflexes.
Amazing.
And thinking.
And the adrenaline, maybe it was the adrenaline that just like was like, we're going to do this right now.
I guess, but I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't put my dogs in a situation in the first place, but
it was in her backyard.
Her backyard.
It climbed her fence. It came to her backyard.
Or maybe like, you know, they have those little dog costumes with the...
You're going to put your dog in a costume every single day for 24 hours a day.
No,
on the off chance
that
a bear climbs your fence.
Why not? Yes.
Amelia, you just can't live in the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains near Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly.
Just know that when you find...
Right.
When you
check that
back
off the list.
Okay, two other things quickly. The first one, it was a slow news week. This was a headline on People. I'm just going to quickly run through it. Courtney Cox, this is so stupid as I say this out loud. She posted on her Instagram what she's calling like a quote Alabama roll, you know, instead of a California, like a sushi roll. It's like her little take on it. Anyway, I thought it was going to be a lot weirder of a snack. It actually sounds fantastic. So what she does is she takes a slice of turkey, then she puts mayo mustard. Nice, solid. Then she crushes up like a Fritos in the sandwich. And then she puts cheese, avocado, and then she rolls up the slice of turkey. And then like, you know, that's her little, it's a hand roll. Anyway, that was going to be a little bit weirder when I clicked into the article. It's just basically a breadless turkey sandwich.
That sounds
sandwich.
Good. I'll allow it. That sounds
great. Sure. Also, I don't know what she's doing. The video is pretty edited and, you know, thought out. I don't know what she's doing making content like that. But anyway, lastly— very quick, for those who were interested when I reported that Mike Posner was climbing up Mount Everest, good news, he's made it to the top. He survived. He summited Mount Everest, and now he's on his way back down. So we can rest easy.
I mean, I will not rest easy until he's like back on his couch because he, I feel like, has had a series of I mean, he's an adventurous guy.
And, he really is.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm rooting for him. Yeah. I think it's great. It's amazing. Huh. Take a nap.
Sorry. No, I'm just
take
like
a load off.
Wow.
Amelia just processing that.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear are so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes has arrived in IMAX.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Let's do cringe mode. I know Kate is extremely excited about this. It's the 20-year anniversary of Moulin Rouge. We're going to cover it. I had a great time watching. I have never seen this movie before.
Wow. Oh my gosh. It's a favorite. I love it. I do have to say, you know, I feel pretty strongly about like exclusively doing bad movies for cringe mode. And anytime I have to check and see if the rewatchables has done it before we do a cringe mode, I feel like it's betraying the spirit of cringe mode. However, I tried to come at this objectively. I had not seen it in several years. And I feel like we did dig up some cringy moments. So I do think it is allowed to be in the cringe mode.
Whatever.
I guess quick summary. I love Moulin Rouge. It's one of my top five favorite movies of all time. And basically, it's this very over-the-top sort of stylistic movie that follows Ewan McGregor as Christian, who basically joins these like bohemians in France, and they want to write a play for it to be performed at this brothel. And Nicole Kidman is a prostitute at the brothel, and she wants to be an actress. She wants to star in the play. There's sort of a classic like miscommunication, comedy of errors. She's supposed to fall in love with this Duke. She ends up falling in love with Christian. She also happens to have consumption, which ultimately she dies from at the end. Spoiler alert. But there are a lot of songs. And all the songs are kind of like mashups of modern day like radio hits, which was kind of the big sort of experiment with Moulin Rouge. It's not kind of your classic musical. What did I miss? They put on a show. She dies at the end. And there's a lot that goes on in between. But it's great.
That was well done.
Thank you.
Good job. All right, let's do some highlights. Kate, go ahead.
My highlight is just that I love this movie. I watched it for the first time in eighth grade with my high school best friend in her basement. She was like, I'm going to show you one of my favorite movies of all time. I was like, great. We just finished Gossip Girl. Like, what's next? And she showed me Moulin Rouge, and I was like, that's not what I expected. And I'm obsessed with it. So we watched it a lot of times growing up. And I was emotional watching it again. It'd been very long. But I guess going into my next highlight, I was like young enough when I watched this movie, and the songs, there are enough oldies in it that whenever I hear the original songs that are like part of any of the songs in the soundtrack, I associate them with like Moulin Rouge first and then, you know, silly love songs or, you know, You Lift Me Up or whatever, any of those songs that are in any of these songs, I'm like, that's a Moulin Rouge song. Like, that's not a regular radio song. Yeah. Sure. So just like anytime I hear any of the snippets, which are a lot of different songs mashed up into this movie, I just always associate it with Moulin Rouge, which is fun when you're, I don't know, listening to oldies.
Yeah. Can I tell you something really embarrassing? It took me 4 full songs to realize that they were taking other popular songs, like radio hits. And this was not an original score. When Ian McGregor starts singing Your Song and he gets to he starts singing, I was like, wait a second. And I looked it up and then I felt like an actual idiot because I did not realize that they had taken those kind of songs and put them in this movie. I
was like, that is impressive considering like the first song is a mashup of Lady Marmalade. It smells like Teen Spirit.
Okay. Where are we? We're doing this in the low lights. First 20 minutes were a fucking fever dream. So I don't actually.
That's true. Yeah, we're going to get to
that.
That
I didn't
catch
fair.
That. That's fair. It's hard to. There are parts that are hard to follow.
Extremely. Also, this movie gave me again, I'm just an enormous idiot. I watched The Prom and was like, Nicole Kidman singing, dancing, being theatrical. This is so fun and unique and new. And no, obviously, as that turns out, that's not the case. So this gave me exactly what I thought The Prom was, but this is obviously 1,000 times better. Nicole Kidman being like absolutely over the top, theatrical, dramatic, every emotion under the sun. It was amazing. And I loved watching her in this kind of role because I've only seen her in like the dark, gloomy stuff.
Yeah. Like the Big Little Lies of it all. Yeah. She actually used to have fun. It turns out crazy.
Imagine. Yeah.
So sad.
You know, on topic of just over the top, I feel like this whole vibe of this movie is over the top. And I enjoy that. Someone was like, you know what? I am going to make this movie insane and we're going to have a fun time. And I guess that guy is Baz Luhrmann. So thanks to him, I was like, is this what, you know, like being on drugs is? Because, okay, count me in. I'm just
apparently.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, like, you know, his first introduction. I mean, not that I drank absinthe after watching this movie, but I'm just like, ooh, so this is absinthe. You see a green fairy that looks like Kylie Minogue, you know, like, okay, cool. Like,
that's what I associate with too. Like an 8th grade, I was like, oh, is that what alcohol's like?
Right, yeah. Like, damn, okay, cool.
Yeah, this whole movie is a lot. And I think this like seamlessly brings us into our lowlights. These kind of movies actually made me really want to watch Chicago with Renee Zellweger. If any of you guys are fans of that. The Roxanne number, I was like, wow, I need to watch Cell Block Tango or whatever is in the Chicago. But anyway, yeah, this movie is a lot. So Kate, you want to talk about that more in the lowlights?
Yeah, even as someone who has seen this movie so many times, starting it up, being like, yes, here we go. The first 20 minutes of this movie are extremely difficult to follow.
Yeah.
You get Christian and he's like, takes you back. He's writing about his long lost love who died. But then you get introduced to these characters and the Bohemians and they're at the brothel and people are yelling and there's CGI and there are songs. And it just is real. It's a lot to follow. And Baz Luhrmann doesn't really sort of start slowly. I would say the weirdest stuff in this movie are in the first half, and then it like gets more normal and as you go. So yeah, I think if this is not your thing, you will know within the first 10 minutes
That's
of this movie, which is helpful, but also can be a lot.
I would say maybe make it past that because I watched the first 20 minutes, was like, oh my God, this is going to be 2 hours of this. And it really was not all like that. It actually turned
really
into a really beautiful story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But yeah, first 20 minutes, I was absolutely lost.
I would say it's a barrier of entry for sure.
Yes. Oh, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. On that note, you know, I can't do the cringy stuff, the awkward scenes. They're difficult for me. And there is sort of this comedy of errors at the beginning where, you know, they're in the elephant, which is like the room where Nicole Kidman hooks up with her clients.
Iconic.
And it is iconic, honestly. But there's like a miscommunication scene where she thinks she's supposed to sleep with Christian. Christian thinks he's pitching her a play. And then she has to pretend like he's not there and she's with the Duke. And it's like this whole, it's supposed to be like, you know, again, very over the top, very sort of comedic, but it's a little too awkward for me. So I do kind of skip through some of that. But it leads to Your Song, which is Chef's Kiss. So
yes,
it is so worth it in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amelia, what else?
Okay. Maybe I'm just crazy, but it took me like 5 years to understand she died of tuberculosis. Like I honestly I thought she died of cancer. I don't, whatever. It's just, I'm confused.
They're not and it took me a super long specific.
Time. No, they aren't, which is, I mean, whatever, who cares? That's fine. But it took me a long time to understand. Okay, tuberculosis. Got it.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, coughing, she coughs blood into a handkerchief. It could be anything.
It could be anything. Exactly. You know? Yeah. So, I mean, it's not really like a low light, but it's just more like, okay, maybe some clarity there. No. Okay. Yeah. That's fine. And then this is maybe really selfish, but you know, I understand why she had to die, but like, did she really have to die?
You know, it's not selfish, actually, Amelia.
Thank you.
I completely agree. It was too sad, actually.
Yes.
And I was duped because I didn't think that was, I mean, yeah, we actually find out like halfway through that she's going to die, but I didn't actually think it was going to be as sad. It really hurts. It's a blow. It's so sad. I don't get it. Watching sad Ewan McGregor legitimately makes you want to die. I've only seen it one other time. It stuck with me. Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith, and he's looking at Anakin and he's like, I have failed you, Anakin. And it was that energy that I was like, Jesus Christ, I can't do this again. I'm tearing. I can't. It's so sad.
Oh my God. That's so true. He's channeling his Anakin Skywalker.
He does. And I'm going to talk about him later because he's my MVP, but he does have a very like angry, sad vibe in both of those movies where he's like yelling at him. He's like, you were the chosen one. But he's like angry, but he's like,
lost.
Right. And then in this movie, when he's like yelling at Satine, you're like, no, don't be angry at her. But he's like really angry with himself.
Yes. Right.
You know, and he's like crying and sad and singing. Yeah.
Well, it's just, it's so tough. And I thought like maybe they could summon a doctor, you know? It's not like this isn't like
can
the
we not
1700s.
Afford one?
Exactly. This is 1900, okay?
We have a jeweled elephant that people are having sex in. Can we get a doctor?
God.
I mean, let's budget here. Jesus.
Seriously.
Right. All right. Shall we do what age the best and the worst?
Yeah, it's only all you me. In this category.
Just me. So you guys can take a load off. age the best, and we'll get into this in the lightning round more specifically, but the soundtrack is still great. If you've seen this movie, it's difficult to choose a favorite. We're going to try later, but the soundtrack is just really, really great. The songs hold up. The scenes hold up. Just really great stuff. Age the worst, and this is a big one. I think this is probably like the biggest low light of the movie. I was watching this on Amazon and they do the thing where they pull up the character names on the sides. And I had never really looked into this before. But I was looking at the character names and listen, it's like an over the top theatrical thing. I don't expect them to name prostitute number two, like Janine. You know what I mean? Like, I don't expect someone's name to be like Todd. Like, I know that they have theatrical names. What I didn't need was the really gross like ethnic stereotyping that happens with the character names. Some of these prostitutes, I guess, what should I be calling them? Some of these sex workers in the brothel?
Sure.
Here are some of the names. Arabia, China Doll, Le Chocolat is played by Dobia Apare, who has like a really big role. Like he saves Nicole Kidman from being raped by the Duke. I'm like, give him a name.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and, right. Yeah.
I know that like it goes sort of into the brothel stereotyping back in the day, like that was how they did it. But I'm like, we didn't have to do that in this movie 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So that was a big downside. And then sort of along with that, they did this sort of Indian themed musical as their big production. And there's just like a lot of ethnic stereotyping there as well that just comes off really gross and bad and just did not age well. So just name your characters. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
And then also age the worst. They did a new version of Moulin Rouge on Broadway recently, a couple years ago, starring Aaron Tveit. And Karen Olivo. Oh. And I was really excited for it. I know Juliet Littman went to see it. We've talked about it at length. But what they did was they updated the songs that are in the medleys. Huh. So instead of Elephant Love Medley having Paul McCartney and Dolly Parton, and it does have some of that still, instead it has like Katy Perry now. Like they sing Fireworks instead of David Bowie.
No.
So
that's funny.
Like I understand wanting to update it and like making that kind of reference for like a new audience, but I don't want that. Like I went to listen to the soundtrack and I was like, this isn't what I wanted. I want the original songs.
Right.
So that to me was a decision that didn't age great.
Yeah. Do you want to just keep rolling? You're next on the MVP list too.
I will keep rolling. My MVP is Ewan McGregor. First of all, great singing voice. We should, as a society, cast Ewan McGregor in more musicals because I think he has some parts and some of these songs are written really well to sort of complement his voice. Like he has some moments in like El Tango to Roxanne and some other ones, and Your Song and Come What May, where he just like, the, I don't know, the harmonies really kind of complement his voice, even if he's like not a singer. And he just, he looks great. He's like peak Ewan McGregor heartthrob, very romantic, extremely in love. There are just some scenes where they cut to him and he's like singing at Nicole Kidman and she's like not even looking at him. And I'm like, oh man.
Oh my God.
That
yeah.
hits right in the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, he just really makes this movie, I think.
If I could get, if we could just double up on it, I would probably pick him too. He probably is like my true MVP, but I do have to give some, not some credit, a lot of credit to Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gave it her all.
Yeah.
She also like, I was reading some trivia about this movie and she went through like a couple like physical injuries because it was very, it's very taxing in every way, it appeared.
Sure.
And I cannot imagine how exhausting it was for her to do this day in, day out. Every emotion she had to do to 200%. So her, she is my MVP.
Yes.
Amelia, who's your pick?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of you guys. I would say, you know what? Just going to give it to Baz Luhrmann. What a guy. He has, he's always done these really stylized, sometimes they're musicals, sometimes they're not, just really, but very like bright and colorful and fun movies. And I think sometimes, you know, people make fun of him for it because it's like, we don't need this. But honestly, I've never not had fun watching a Baz Luhrmann film. So
agreed.
Yeah.
We should do his Romeo and Juliet sometime.
Sure. I love that movie.
There's a lot there.
Honestly, really, I would also do Australia. Okay. I didn't hate that movie.
I've never seen Australia.
It's actually another Nicole Kidman banger.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do the lightning round before we wrap up. Is this movie too weird, the right amount of weird, or not weird enough, Amelia?
I'd say right amount.
Kate?
I agree. I think it works.
Best side character, Kate.
For me, it's a tie between the singing Moon, who sings backup on several songs, like an opera singer Moon. Sure.
Screaming. Okay.
And is it Kylie Minogue? Is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. I doubted myself. She plays the green absinthe fairy. So when they like drink absinthe, she like appears and is like, I'm the green fairy, which is just inspired casting.
I'm giving it to Jim Broadbent, aka Professor Slughorn.
Oh my gosh.
Aka he's not, he is a side character, but he's a very large role in this movie. And he's also in Game of Thrones. I was just like to see him.
Listen, Jim Broadbent brings it every time. There's a single project he's in where you're like, why is Jim Broadbent here? He's the opposite of David Spade. Like, you always want Jim Broadbent involved. You know?
I had no idea you felt so strongly about Jim Broadbent.
Love Jim
Broadbent. Happy I said that. Yeah, me too, I guess.
He's great in this movie.
Amelia, who's your favorite side character?
You know, I agree. I love the random Kylie Minogue. Also, now that you mentioned the Moon, you know what the Moon reminds me of is, have you ever seen, I'm not that I like, okay, just forget it. The Moon in the, like the bear in the big blue house. It's very similar moons.
Oh, Amelia.
Right?
Yeah.
Deep cut. Deep cut.
Thank you.
Deep cuts this episode.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
But
I like
it.
What is the worst song, Kate?
The worst song, I mean, bar none, there's no competition, is Like a Virgin, the Madonna song. You all know and love it. But it's performed by Jim Broadbent and the Duke, who is so creepy. And basically they're like talking about how Satine is going to come to the Duke and it's going to be worth it in the end because he gets to sleep with Satine. And Jim Broadbent like put like is just like playing the woman in this relationship and like chasing around the Duke singing Like a Virgin. And it's so creepy. It is nightmare fuel. It haunts me to this day.
It's disgusting.
No me gusta.
Yeah. Okay. Really, what's tough. The best song, Kate?
I have a lot of opinions about this, obviously. I have to give it to Come What May, which is like the secret song that Christian and Satine sort of write for each other, where it's like, even if things are going bad, or like, even if she has to pretend to be in love with the Duke, like, they're going to sing this song and they'll know that they're in love. It's just one of the great cinematic duets.
You know how I know you love this movie is you refer to them exclusively by their character names and not by the actors and actresses, which is what we normally do.
That
for
is
cringe
rare.
Mode.
That is
funny.
Rare.
Like Jennifer Aniston does this, and no, we're using Christian
right.
and Satine.
I'm sorry.
No, keep going.
My other favorite and my actual like personal favorite song is El Tango to Roxanne, which is, Liz mentioned it earlier. It is kind of similar vibe to Cell Block Tango as it is a tango version of Roxanne. by the police. Mm-hmm. And it's sung by the narcoleptic Argentinian, who again deserved a name, but
right.
And he just crushes it. It's so dramatic.
Yes.
Ewan McGregor is singing on it as well. And it's just like this dramatic scene. Good. Nicole Kidman's in the tower with the Duke, like Christian just losing his mind on the ground. and it's just great. It's such a good, I guess, cover. It's technically a cover of Roxanne, but really great, really dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Very dramatic. I still have like his face in my mind. Like, whoa. You know, I like the Your Song. Because who doesn't love Elton John and Ewan McGregor, you know?
So. I'm thinking that one too, because that's when I was like, oh, these aren't made by this movie. These are songs that are made by other people. Okay, that's it on Moulin Rouge. Keep going. Two times unanswerable questions. Kate, take it away.
Okay, two disturbing birthday cakes for children have gone viral this week on Twitter, which like one, sure, but two, I was like, we should talk about it. This seems to be, you know, are the kids okay? I'm leading to an unanswerable question here, but I do want to tell you about the cakes. The first one was from Casey Faye. He said, my niece turned three today. She asked for a Lion King cake, but specifically the moment where Mufasa dies because, quote, everyone will be too sad to eat the cake and it will be all for me. Oh. So there are pictures of this cake and literally Simba is on the cliff. There are rocks on it and he's looking above the corpse of Mufasa, which is just a traumatic childhood moment for any of us who have seen The Lion King. So that was disturbing, but I was like, that's weird. Moving on. But then I saw another tweet this week from Edmund Kingsley, who said, tomorrow we'll have a six-year-old. And like so many girls her age, she insisted on a cake depicting the future Queen Elizabeth I witnessing the execution of Anne Boleyn by Henry VIII. What? So you zoom in on this cake and it's Henry Tudor and Anne Boleyn and a castle cake. And Anne Boleyn is just like standing in front of the chopping block. And that's the sixth birthday cake. So my unanswerable question for you is, what is the weirdest birthday theme and or cake that you had growing up? Obviously not going to be as weird as these, I assume, but I would love to know if not.
Amelia, do you have an answer for this?
No, this is like, I'm sorry, I'm a little traumatized. I didn't click on these cakes until just now for some reason.
They're a lot. The kids, I think the kids have had a rough year.
Yeah, just that's
as
probably
a society,
true. That's
what was
true.
Like, what did you have like an elaborate birthday theme at any point growing up? Either of you? No? Crickets?
I mean, Amelia's searching to the depths of her mind right now.
Liz, what about you?
I feel like
the Kellys went all out.
Not for me. Sweet 16 at Benihana's once, but I did actually, as a party favor for my 15th, give everyone like a little betta fish in a baggie.
Oh, that's,
and apparently
that's a cute
they
idea.
All died the next day.
Oh tough. So, that's dark. Geez.
That's my dark birthday treat.
So, Amelia, if you do not have something, I was really obsessed with the Nutcracker when I was young. I texted my mom about this and she didn't give me an answer. So I think this was my weirdest one. But when I was like five, I had a Nutcracker outfit that I wore everywhere.
That's cute.
And I
was
obsessed with the Nutcracker. And so my mom made me a cake that looked like the Nutcracker's head. And I had a Nutcracker themed birthday. But then like since we were triplets, we each got a theme.
So God.
My brother would be like pirates and my sister was like fairies and I was like dressed as the Nutcracker.
Cute.
So
that's
I think
cute.
That was my weirdest one.
That's
my weirdest
so much
one.
Work for your mom. Couldn't you three decide on one thing?
No, we couldn't.
No,
so.
Sorry.
Oh my God.
At least it wasn't Anne Boleyn or Mufasa's murder.
See, that's true. There's
so
something,
mom, you're welcome.
I feel like social media has made it so easy to go viral if you just subvert the expectations.
You're right. There is that aspect of it. I do agree.
It's a little like, did she really ask for an Anne Boleyn cake?
And why does a six-year-old know about the beheading of Anne Boleyn? You know,
that
right?
True.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm just
all good questions. Let's invest.
Serious.
Let's milkshake duck the Anne Boleyn cake, shall
okay.
we?
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. I have a question this week, and it is, are you guys ready for Light Academia, which is apparently replace cottagecore, according to InStyle? So to me, it seems extremely similar. And it's also should not be confused with the Dark Academia, which Kate, you've educated us all on in past episodes. So Light Academia apparently is basically just like the romantic Taylor Swift version, which also reminds me of cottagecore, which is confusing. But anyway, it's preppy. It's like tennis skirts, loafers, sweaters knotted around your shoulders. All the influencers are doing it. Are you guys ready? And would you ever participate in Light Academia?
To me, I feel like it's still cottage core season.
Yeah,
Academia seems like a fall thing. Like if we're going to do the light or dark Academia outfits, like I clicked on this and saw a lot of plaid. I saw some like light blazers. Like that's a September at the earliest vibe.
Sure.
We got to take cottage core into summer. I don't know what we're going to do during the summer. Come up with something different.
Yeah.
And then get into the Academia fashions in the fall.
Are you going to get into the Academia fashions in the fall?
You know I love a blazer, so maybe. I was doing that already. I didn't know that it was Light Academia, but I will take credit for that. Sure.
Yeah. Amelia, what are you feeling about this trend?
You know, I see a lot of sweaters going on. And as you may know, if you listen to this podcast, I am a sweaty person. So they just don't work for me, you know? Yeah. I mean, maybe if I'm just wearing like a bra under it, but like I like to layer.
Yeah,
right. You know, so.
Maybe
it's not
if
practical.
You stayed in Minnesota for
maybe.
The fall and winter, then maybe you'd get more into it.
Right. But either way, it's too soon. It's too soon for this.
It's too soon. Yeah. It's too soon.
That's fine. Lastly, saving the best for last. Take it away, Amelia.
Okay. So the other day I was on, I guess, Spotify or I don't know what I was doing, but I was like listening to the top music because I know, you know, Olivia Rodrigo's Sour came out, but then we also had BTS kind of usurping her little moment because I think they're like the number one stream song or whatever on Spotify and on the Billboard, whatever, whatever. But I listened to their new song, Butter, and wouldn't you know, I am obsessed with this song. It is so fucking good. So I need a rundown. And who better to go to than Kate? I mean, I need to know what other songs I should be listening to. I need a general synopsis of BTS and each of the members because they're all like, from the music video I saw of Butter, they're all very charismatic. They're all singers. They're all dancers. They're all cute, which, you know, I mean, not every boy band, you know, it's like, who was the fan of Joey Fatone? You know what I'm saying?
True.
So, it's just kind of surprising because there's like, what, seven of them?
There are seven. Amelia, I've been waiting my whole life for this moment. Have to tell you, we've done 57 and a half minutes on this podcast. This is a special challenge for me to keep this brief. And I knew this was coming. And so I'm going to try to keep it brief. I'm not going to give you the whole lowdown. Here's what I'm going to do. I got a text from Danny Heifetz 2 weeks ago, and he said, we've been at a KBBQ place for 2.5 hours. We've watched so many BTS music videos in a row. We're obsessed. And what he asked me was, I want you to tell me which BTS member I am, which I thought was a great question. I was like, this is a great personality test. Let me think. And so inspired by that, I thought maybe I would do what we do a lot on this podcast and match the Tea Time member to the BTS member. Just to give you, there are seven of them. We're not going to get to all of them, but I'm just going to go really briefly just because I feel like you just need something to like hook you. You know, it's not enough to be like the person with yellow hair is so-and-so.
Right.
You know?
Well, maybe it'll be like James McAvoy updates, but like BTS member updates.
Right. Right. I'll just going to tell each of you very briefly which BTS member you are, and then I can just direct you to more information. Try to keep this brief. I'm really going to try, but I know everything there is to know about them, so it's going to be difficult. Okay. So I want to apologize to Jungkook and Taeyong, who are just not going to make the cut for today because, again, there are seven of them, and one of you is two of them. So I don't want to leave anyone out. The fans get very upset when you leave someone out.
Oh, my God.
Jungkook is my favorite, so no shade to him. It's fine. So first of all, I told Danny that he is RM, and I think I also am. RM is the stage name for BTS's leader. His real name is Namjoon. And I think Danny and I are the same member because we're both like just kind of nerdy. I think we're both kind of endearing nerds, closet nerds, if you will, which is RM is. He's the one that you've probably seen like in interviews. He speaks English. He's the one who taught himself English from Friends. And so he like is kind of the voice of the group when they're in America.
That's funny.
He also writes a lot of their songs. And Danny and I both write for the site. So that's who I assigned as our government issued member of BTS. As for Tea Time, I'm going to start with Kaya. I would say Kaya is most like Jin. Who is the oldest member of BTS. Kaya's the youngest member of T-Time, so that doesn't match. However, I think once you get into BTS, you realize that he's sort of vital to like the offstage dynamic. He does a lot of like the moral support. He's kind of the mom of the group. He's very responsible. He's good with people. He kind of holds things down offstage.
I like it.
So he's not quite as showy. But I think the real ones know that like Jin is like very important to the group. Kaya just sent me a heart in the chat. That was very Jin of you. Okay. I thought both Liz and Amelia, I think, were tough. As soon as I told myself to do this, I was like, this is actually quite difficult.
That's funny.
But I'm committed. I'm going to decide Liz is like Jimin, who is one of the vocalists and main dancers of BTS. And this is a very simple explanation. He has a very distinctive, recognizable, very sweet little voice.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. I decided that's pretty self-explanatory for that's Liz funny. Kelly, voice of the Ringer podcast network.
Yes.
Just like no one has ever listened to a BTS song who knows BTS and been like, I can't tell if that's Jimin or not, because his voice is just very recognizable, very popular. And he's also very sweet and very nice, and he's a very hard worker. So
thanks. Okay.
And then Amelia was the hardest, so you get two members because you contain multitudes.
Amelia.
I'm so excited.
The first member is Suga, who is both of them are members of the Rap Line of BTS, which started out as a hip hop group and has recently kind of transitioned to pop.
Oh wait, really? That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So his real name is Yoongi. And he's kind of a fan favorite. He looks very sweet, very cute. I think he's the shortest member. but once you get into his music, you realize he has kind of this sneaky, like, fuck around and find out attitude. So he has a lot of, like, very aggressive solo work. He has some mixtapes that he's released that are, like, very aggressive. And Amelia also has some solo work of her own where she yells into a microphone that she's clutching very tightly about The Bachelor. So I just felt like that matched.
Yeah, she also is a fan favorite.
And also, I think the Rap Line fits her very well because, like, they don't get as many lines as the other people, but then, like, they have the fan favorite lines. Like, if... You know, that's you go funny. Into the YouTube comments and everyone's talking about like this one line. You know, you go to our Twitter account and everyone's talking about Amelia, you know, her monologue on Kirsten Dunst. So hand in hand.
Right.
And then the other member that I think Amelia is similar to is J-Hope, who is also a member of the Rap Line. He's also the main dancer. And he has a very infectious vibe. He has a very happy energy. He's leads the dance break in Butter.
And
he is just very energetic, very full of life. Like when Amelia was talking about Ink Master earlier, I was like, this is J-Hope energy. He gets so excited about things like that and just goes and goes.
My God, thank you. So nice.
These are your assigned BTS members. Wow. I'm happy to tell you more about them or anyone else in the group. But if you or the listeners want to do any research on your own, we have many, many BTS related. I'm very sorry to give you homework. I promise I'm wrapping this up.
No, please.
We did a BTS Top Fives podcast on Ringer Dish last year with Isaac Lee and with Youngdae Kim, who wrote a book about BTS. And we each did our favorite BTS songs, favorite BTS music videos. It's like a very easy place to start, I would say.
Perfect.
I have a lot of blogs on The Ringer about BTS. I have one about their hair from 2020. probably most useful would be I did a ranking of every album leading up to their seventh album in 2020. So that's like a good kind of breakdown of like their big songs. Mm-hmm. And I have not done a lot recently because the fans got really mad at me.
I've missed probably
the last year. In terms of my writing. However, I have been known, I like to make very personalized recommendations. I don't like to be like, here's all of their music videos because that's too much. I have been known to make PowerPoints for friends who want to get into a certain K-pop group but don't know where to start.
Amazing. Listen,
that's kind of like professional level. Like, you know, I don't make it for the amateurs. It's got to be like, you already have to have a basis. However, Amelia, since you said that you like Butter specifically, I wanted to recommend some similar vibes.
Yes.
So sort of colorful, upbeat videos, songs, performances. Here's what I recommend. Boy With Love, which is their song with Halsey.
Okay.
From 2020. DNA, which I believe is from 2018, which is also like a really good just like intro to BTS, like upbeat song. Anpan Man, which is like really kind of funny, comedic song. It's my sister's favorite BTS song.
Oh.
Go Go, which is also like upbeat, funny. Idol, which was their single a couple years ago. And Airplane Part 2, which is also a single from a couple years ago. So those are all like similar energy to butter. I'm sorry this went for a very long time.
No, this is great.
Been waiting for this moment for so long.
You forget how long Amelia and I talk about Survivor and make you just sit through it.
So I tried to make it concise. If anyone wants to know more about BTS, slide into the mentions. Yeah.
The Menchies. I like that.
Text me, whatever. I know.
No, this is great. Hey, I asked for it and it got so much more in a good way.
Great. I'm so glad.
Thank you. This is very good.
Okay. That's it for this week. Thank you, Kaya, our producer. And thank you all for listening. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Atwell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.